Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number, if you would like to question or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours, or anything that is proposed by our guest, a good friend of one of my best friends, is 877-300-7645. It is my pleasure to introduce Avi Lipkin. Avi is known to me through a very good friend, a friend that has been on this program a number of times, Jerry McLaughlin, who is the not only the founder and CEO of Special Guests, but Jerry is also the producer of the film recently done as a modern adaptation of The Prodigal Son. Avi, it's a pleasure to have you as part of the program.
Great to be back.
Avi, you've written a number of books. They include Is Fanatic Islam a Global Threat? Christian Revival for Israel's Survival, The Islamic Threat Updates, which is an almanac, Israel's Bible Block, Islam Prophesied in Genesis, and a controversial title here, Return to Mecca. I assume that all of those books are not only available at your site, which would be vicmord.com, but also probably at Amazon.
Well, I've heard that it is being sold on Amazon, but I have not built that up yet. But if people write to me at my website or call me also, they can order it from my 800 number, 1-800-540-0828, 1-800-540-0828.
Okay. Let's begin. You've written a number of books, obviously, on Islam. What caused you, as a man by Jewish heritage, why did you come to be interested in Islam in general and go all the way to the point that you thought that you would take a risk, because any time you write a book about Islam that is unfavorable to Islam, Muslims threaten to kill you? What was the motivation for writing these books?
The word is Holocaust. You know, in World War II, Jewish people went to fight in the American Army and the British Army and the Russian Army to defeat this Nazi horrible system. And people were saying, well, aren't you afraid to die in the war? And they said, we Jews are all doomed to death anyway. We had our recent holiday of Purim, in which, you know, Uncle Mordecai says to Esther, to his niece, you know, she's afraid to go to the king and tell her about Haman, the horrible Haman, because the king might kill her. And so he said, we're all going to die. You have no choice. And besides, maybe if you don't help us, you know, God will provide someone else who will. The salvation will come from somewhere else. But the point I'm saying is that I was born and raised in America, praise God, the greatest country on the face of the earth. And it was inculcated in me, not by my parents, but by the Hebrew school where I was studied, how horrible the Germans were because of the Holocaust, how horrible the Russians and the Polish and the Ukrainians were for 2,000 years of horrible murders and persecution. And I had not really learned anything about what we call today white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Christianity. And by the way, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Christianity includes blacks and Hispanics and Chinese and others. But I moved to Israel at age 19 with this misconception that the Christians were the enemies and the Muslims were the allies, because in Spain in 1492, the Jews were allies with the Muslims. And then God has a sense of humor, and he matched me up with my wife, Rachel, who, like me, is Jewish, but unlike me, I was born in America. She was born in Egypt, in an Islamic country. And the first thing my wife said to me, she said, you know, you don't know anything, she said to me. Islam is the enemy, she said to me. The Christians are our brothers and sisters. And in fact, you know, the Muslims call us together, the Jews and the Christians, the people of the book. And it was a complete shock for me. Like, it goes totally contrary to what I was taught in Hebrew school, that the Muslims were the allies and the Christians were the enemies. And so listen, you know, Rachel has been my wife for the last 44 years. She's an intelligence gatherer for the Israeli government. and she monitors the Arabic language broadcasts because she left Egypt at age 20. Arabic is her mother tongue, and there is no one in the world like Rachel who can interpret what these people are really saying. And the bottom line is clash of civilizations. The bottom line is that Islam must triumph. Islam must conquer the world. And that Christianity must be destroyed, and Judaism, which is the mother, or shall I say sister religion of Christianity, must be destroyed. And the Hindus and the Buddhists must be all annihilated. And the blacks in Africa must be all annihilated or enslaved. And then what happens is the Muslims go ahead and kill each other. I said, that's not a religion. That's insanity. And just to conclude, you know, I have a 3-year jail sentence commuted to an $1,000 fine in Switzerland for hate speech, you know, for saying that Islam is a criminal psychosis and Allah is the devil. And but the Christians in the churches here in America, they understand it. And so I have my audience, and people are listening to me.
Yeah, I wish you hadn't chosen to accept the notion that Christianity is an ally of Judaism. That is not true. But your presentation of Islam is accurate. It is a psychosis. It is the most demented and destructive, most damning and deadly religion ever created by humankind. And it exists for the purpose of conquering the world. And its view is that you either surrender. That's what Islam means, is to surrender. You either surrender to Islam or they will kill you. And so long as we tolerate Islam, then the whole world is in a concentration camp, not unlike the Holocaust. Do you have any idea, Avi, why Muslims almost universally hate Jews?
Well, it does say in the Quran that the Jews are the most implacable enemies of Allah and the Muslim believers. So that really runs contrary to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who is the God of the Jews and the Christians. The God of the Jews and the Christians loves the Jews. Zechariah 2, verse 12 says that the Jews are the apple of his eye, and that anybody who touches the Jews touches the apple of God's eye. I also believe, as a Jew, that the Christians are grafted into the Jews because they have the same God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we share the same Old Testament, and we all agree Messiah is a Jew from Israel who speaks Hebrew. So for the Christians, that's Jesus. Yeah. For the Jews, we don't know who Messiah is.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, what?
That's it. That again is really not accurate. Paul is the founder of the religion. I know. Paul is. Let me finish here.
Yeah.
Paul is the founder of the religion of Christianity. Although Paul was Jewish, he hated Jews. The reason the early Christian church was so anti-Semitic, it was because of Paul. And Paul's basic concept is that the God of the Torah is irrelevant, and his Torah is irrelevant. And it has been replaced by his gospel of grace. And so, unfortunately, I wish it were the case that the God of the Christians were the same as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But it is just not the case. But it is true, and this is the reason I was asking the question, is that Allah was modeled after Satan. Allah spends all of his time in hell. Yahweh, which is God's name, chose Yehudim, which is the actual scriptural name for Jews, to be his witnesses. Yisrael is a set-apart country unto Yahweh. The covenant was established with Yisrael. And as a result of that, Allah, who is modeled after Satan, hates what Yahweh loves.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
The reason that Muslims hate Jews is because the wannabe God of the Quran hates what Yahweh loves, because we all know the story. The reason that that Hasatan, a Hebrew word meaning the adversary, was booted out of heaven is that he wanted to be worshipped as if he were God. He wanted to be above God, and he created a religion, Islam, that positions him as God. And so in his religion, that which is near and dear to Yahweh's heart is hated by Muslims. Therefore, they want to conquer and destroy not only all Jews, but Israel.
All Jews, Israel, the Christians, okay, because the Christians also, it says seven times in the New Testament, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So there is a connection with Christians.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a rainbow of colors as to what kind of a Christian. But
yeah.
The bottom line is, and again, this is what my wife taught me from day one. When she was in Egypt, her Christian girlfriends in school, Coptic Christians, were crying when they were when my family was being booted out of Egypt, expelled penniless.
Yeah.
They said when they're finished with the Saturday people, they come for the Sunday people.
Yeah.
But together, the Muslims look at the Jews and the Christians as one people. And according to Islam, Jesus is returning a second time as an Arabic-speaking Muslim to slit the throats of the Jews on Saturday and the Christians on Sunday. So my job is to go to the Christians and say, hey, listen, we're in the same boat here together.
Yeah, and actually, Avi, there is no Jesus in the Quran. It is Esau. Esau is the one person that God calls out by name in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms to say that he hates. And he hates Esau because Esau ran away and embraced the religion of Ishmael, which became Islam. So the reality here is that that the Quran is anti-Semitic. And Muslims hate Jews because Allah was modeled after Satan. And Allah, therefore, hates everything that Yahweh loves. When we look at Islamic behavior today, did Muhammad set the example that Muslims are following by hunting Jews as prey?
Yes. Muhammad absolutely is the role model. And with your permission, I will project further back to Ishmael and Esau, who were men of the sword.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this idea of men of the sword is basically the destruction of the human race.
Mm-hmm.
God hates the sword, and God says in Genesis 9, anyone who sheds the blood of another human being, his blood will be shed in turn, because we're all in the image of God. I wanted to add one more thing to your previous comments. Not only does Allah hate the Jews and Christians, he hates the Hindus and Buddhists and the blacks, because, you know, they're pagan and not, you know, I'm talking about the blacks in Africa. And the Muslims, Allah hates the Muslims too. They kill each other in his name. And when the Muslims pray, and I said this in Switzerland, I got a jail sentence for this. I said, you know, Allahu Akbar does not mean God is great. Allahu Akbar means Allah is greater, which is what Satan said. Satan said he was greater.
Exactly.
But Allah cannot prove that he's greater until every human being on the face of the earth, including the Muslims, are dead. And that's the plan of Allah, to kill the Muslims too.
Yeah. There's a reason, and there's a history here, Avi, that I think is important for our listeners to know as to why the Quran transitions from having Jews be the universal enemy of Islam, why they originally became the enemy of Islam, and then why in the final two surahs that were revealed, those who would be enemies of Islam was broadened to include Christians and others. We'll return when Shattering Myth returns in a moment. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a discussion with Avi Lipkin. Avi Lipkin is the author of a great number of books. You can buy any one of his books by going to his website, which is, why don't you, can you share that website with us again? I think it is Vic Mord, VicMord.com, correct?
Fantastic. www.vicmord.com.
Yeah. Okay, good. Just a little bit of history, because I think this progression is a valuable insight. Initially, pagans were the enemy of Islam. Had nothing to do with paganism, because Islam adopted every pagan practice that the Arabs were practicing in Mecca. And then it transitioned to Jews because of two things. One is the Jews in Yathrib sold Muhammad Talmud stories, which Muhammad corrupted to make his Quran seem credible. And when they threatened to expose him for his fraud, it was easier to kill them than anything else. Moreover, the only reason that Islam survived in the initial years was that Jews were prosperous in Yathrib, and they loaned the Muslims money, which the Muslims didn't want to pay back, and that the easiest way not to pay it back was to kill the Jews. So there were three Jewish communities in Yathrib. Muhammad systematically exiled the first. The second, he killed the men, as he did with the third, raped the women, enslaved the children. And then the last Jewish community within camel ride of Yathrib was Kabar, where the phrase Allahu Akbar was first uttered. The God of Islam, Allah, is greater than the God of the Jews, Yahweh, was the intent of the prayer of fear. And at that point, Muslims had overhunted Jews. There were no more Jews to rob, to rape, to plunder. And so the next closest community was a Byzantine community in the outskirts of the Byzantine Empire. And so Muhammad in his Quran, because the Quran is nothing but situational scriptures to satiate Muhammad's lust for sex, power, and money, in the ninth surah and in the fifth surah, the last two handed down, Muhammad redefined infidels as Christians so that he could hunt them. Now, you did say something in the last segment that is extremely important for people to recognize. It's not just that Jews and now Christians are the enemies of Islam. Muslims are the enemy of Islam. And most people would say, how is that possible? Well, the ninth surah, when Muhammad could not motivate a sufficient number of his Muslims to go attack the Byzantines, who actually had an army, he called peaceful Muslims hypocrites. And then he said, if you were a peaceful Muslim, Allah hates you. The jihadist Muslims must kill you so that Allah can attend to your torture in the hottest places in hell. And so ultimately, once Muslims have killed everybody who isn't a Muslim, they will then kill the peaceful Muslims so that all that will be left is jihadist Muslims who will kill one another.
If I may, I'm going to go into a new subject, which will confirm everything you're saying. You know, we're looking at Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And Syria is a crazy place because you've got these crazy fanatic Hezbollah and Iranian Revolutionary Guards who are Shiites fighting against the crazy Al-Qaeda and Nusra. These are all fanatic, crazy Sunni groups. And why are the Shiites and why are the Sunnis killing each other? And, you know, I do have a 90-minute CD and DVD that I did with Chuck Missler, who I'm sure you've heard of. And it explains, you know, why Muslims kill Muslims. And, for example, in the case of the Shiites versus the Sunnis, it's about power. It's about sex. It's about money. It's about control. And what happened was there were three caliphs who came after Muhammad, Abu Bakr, Uthman, and Omar, and they're the fathers of the Sunnis. And then the fourth caliph, Ali, like, you know, Muhammad Ali, the boxer, Ali creates a dynasty. Hassan and Hussein are his children. And then they decide to wipe out all the followers of the first three caliphs because there's a lot of money involved here. And it's like mafia, you know, mafia wars. And, you know, mafia has family values. Family values number one in the mafia is you don't tread on the other family turf. And so the Shiites and the Sunnis have been slaughtering each other for 1,400 years over who exactly is going to lead Islam. And that's all it is. It's completely
crazy. You know the prophecy in the book of Bereshit of Genesis, where Yahweh's messenger speaks of the future of those people who will identify themselves with Ishmael.
Right.
What does he say of the of those who will identify themselves with Ishmael?
Well, there you got it. Genesis 16 verse 11. I go into this very deeply in my fifth book, Islam Prophesied in Genesis. This is one of the most prophetic verses in the whole Bible. The angel of God says to Hagar, the mother of Ishmael, before he's even born, you know, she's pregnant, and he says, you're going to have a son, his name is going to be Ishmael, he's going to be a wild ass, he's going to be a wild donkey, and his hand will be against all his brethren's hands, and all his brethren's hands will be against his hand, and he will dwell in the face of his brethren, which means constant warfare with everybody.
Correct. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. To Shattering Myths. We're here with Avi Lipkin, who is the author of a great number of books on Islam and on Israel. You can find him at vicmord.com. Avi, how is it that a religion that breeds distrust, breeds despair, breeds incompetence can be a serious threat to Israel?
Well, you know, at the very beginning of the show, you spoke about this, that there is something called God. And opposed to God, there is something lesser called Allah or Satan. And that Allah, Satan, is vying with God for supremacy. And so if Israel, and I say also the Christians, are part of apple of God's eye, But on the other hand, God also loves the Hindus and the Buddhists and the blacks. And he also loves the Muslims because they're all in his image.
Let me just interrupt here, because the show is called Shattering Myths, and we do shatter the myths of religion. God does not love people that he does not know and that do not know him. God's very selective on who he loves. He hates religion. So it isn't true that God loves all the little people of the world. That is a religious myth. God doesn't even know them, and he's very clear in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms in saying so. But it is true that God loves Yisrael. He loves Yehudim. He established his covenant with Yisrael and with Yehudim, and he doesn't change. So he is steadfast in his adoration, his love for this place and these people.
Well, my approach always has been God does not seek the death of the sinner. God seeks the repentance and life of the sinner, and to bless the person if that person repents. So I agree with you. The person has to repent of the sin of idolatry. I agree with that. But the bottom line is Allah is an equal opportunity murderer. Allah will kill everyone, including the Muslims. And so this is something that is threatening the human race and human civilization. And so my message basically is to terminate Islam. Just as the Allies had to terminate Nazism in 1945, had to terminate Tojo fascism in Japan. And you look today, and Japan today is actually America's best ally in the Far East, because the Japanese, have adopted Western civilization democracy. And the Germans have become kind of, they're democratic. They're not Nazis today. But you had to ban Nazism. So, if we want to bless every human being on the face of the earth, of course, we have to bring them the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But to do that, we have to ban the devil. We have to ban Allah.
The best way to incapacitate the wiles of Allah, of Satan, of false gods, including the false religion of Christianity and others, is to expose and condemn them. And the standard that is the most effective antidote for that is actually the Torah. So the Torah teaches us how to avoid being swept into the delusions of false religions and false gods. I think there is an answer to the question that I last asked you, which is why is a religion that is so incompetent? I mean, you look at the 50-some Islamic countries, and other than those that gush with black ooze, they are so impoverished. They don't manufacture anything of consequence. Their people are uneducated. They live in squalor. How could such people be an actual threat to Israel? I think that to a large degree, the answer is the United States, that the United States is the arms merchant of the world, and that the United States has sold hundreds of billions of dollars of advanced weapons to these people. And in many cases, has given them the weapons, as is in the case of Pakistan and Egypt. The United States is making Islam viable as a threat to Israel.
Well, I have to be very careful now. When I'm speaking on a Christian station, I just start quoting the New Testament, even though I'm a Jew, and Christians understand what I'm saying. But, if you'll allow me, if you say no, I won't do it. But, in the book of Revelation, you have something called the harlot riding the dragon. And I say Islam is the dragon, and the harlot is the one world government or the banking corporation, oil companies that are selling weapons and making money. And, for money, they will destroy anyone who believes in God, because their God is mammon. And this is actually the message of a Jew to the Christians in every church where I go. It's a question, are you serving God or are you serving mammon? And so I agree with your point. But it's not just the U.S. All the world powers are trying to sell weapons to the Muslims, the Russians, of course, the Chinese, everyone. But, of course, if they have the money and they have the numbers and they have this power, the oil and everything, the Jews are so few, and until now we have not yet found oil, and even if we did, it wouldn't be enough to counterbalance all the oil in the Islamic world, and we don't have the numbers. This is how the agenda, which suppresses its own people, Islamic agenda suppresses its own people, and 70% of the Muslims are totally illiterate all over the world. And so they spread the Quran. They're manipulated by their Islamic leadership.
Correct. So if the United States wasn't providing weapons to the Islamic world, Islam would not be a viable threat to Israel. I mean, it's the most they'd have to fight Israel would be sticks and stones. And so it's there is a the United States is quite culpable in this whole mess. We have exacerbated the problem. You know, another great example is the United States forced Israel, cajoled Israel into giving up Gaza. The United States wants Israel to give up Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. They want Israel to trade land for peace with a mythical people who have a history of never honoring any agreement. Is there any chance that that will work?
It won't work, but the good news is, and this is one thing I share every night in every church where I speak, I say the Lord is in control. God is in control. And no matter what the presidents of the United States say, Democrat or Republican, God will shield Israel always from, I don't want to say the insanity, but let me say the foolishness of ignorant people in Washington who think they know what they're doing, but they really don't have a grasp on anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of prophetic ink that is directed towards two battles in the last days. My calculations using the Torah is that we're within 20 years of the final days. Is that there are two wars. One is the Magog War, which is all the nations that are listed and participating in it are Islamic nations. And they attack Israel, and Yahweh himself intercedes to save Israel. And then there is a second war, a rendezvous at Megiddo. And in that battle, Yahweh again intercedes. But that time, even Jerusalem is threatened. It is attacked. But based upon the prophecies that Yahweh has made through his Torah prophets and Psalms, and not once has he been errant, you are correct. Israel survives. No matter, you know, as I look at the Iranian nuclear ambition, and I understand why Bibi Netanyahu is leading the charge against them acquiring the nuclear bomb, but in reality, the countries that ought to be more concerned are Europe and America, not Israel, because Israel has a friend in high places.
You know, sir, yesterday I was watching C-SPAN, and they were interviewing Admiral or the top Navy guy, McCraven, and, of course, the Mattis, who is the top of the guy in the Army. And very interesting C-SPAN. I don't usually watch C-SPAN, but this is very good. And, you know, when things get really interesting, usually the generals say, well, you know what, sir, Senator, I'll talk to you after this is over. It's not for public consumption. But the question that he was asked when he said, I'll talk to you afterwards, is there a possibility of a war with North Korea and China in the Far East, which would basically eclipse what's going on in the Middle East? He said, I'll talk to you after the thing. Because, you know, North Korea has said that I think it's today they're going to annul the 60-year-old agreement signed after the Korean War, that there's an armistice, you know, there's a ceasefire. Right. The North Koreans said they're going to cancel that. And, you know, and I know that this whole idea of sequestration, whether it's right or wrong, sends a very clear message of weakness to the Russians, the Chinese, and the North Koreans, and to the Iranians. I think... If you agree with what Bill Koenig said and John McTernan, that when the United States goes against Israel, eventually what happens is God goes against the United States. And I'm very afraid, I pray I'm wrong, but I'm very afraid of a war in the Far East, which would eclipse what we are seeing now. It could be a war.
I'm not, but for lots of reasons. And I think America would be vastly more secure if it did not have a Department of Defense. But... The reality is that there's no way that China is going to attack the United States. That is a political myth that I guess somehow serves the Obama administration.
No. Excuse me. China. Not attack
China.
The United States.
China. China.
Taiwan.
China owns the United States. They may attack Taiwan and take claim to it. It's, I don't think in the short term it's in their interest to do so. They could easily do so, and the world would not intervene. Because there is no way to prevail in that kind of a battle, and while Korea, North Korea could shoot off an atomic bomb, thus far it has been shown that their missile technology is more likely to have it come back down and land on them than it is on anyone else. I just don't see that as occurring. I see over the next 20 years. that Yahweh's predictions remain consistently accurate, and that the greatest threat to humankind will continue to be Islam, and that Muslims are becoming universally more fundamentalist, which means that they are becoming ever more jihadist, they're becoming ever more anti-Semitic. And as conditions in the Islamic countries continue to deteriorate, as they are, because they're becoming more fundamentalist, and fundamentalist Islam is destructive of all things positive, they're going to blame their despair on Israel. And I think that what we're going to see is pleas from the world for Israel to give up the West Bank. And once Israel gives up the West Bank, it is indefensible. And we'll begin World War III, which will be an attack by Muslims in unison on Israel again. And this time, that war is going to be devastating for everyone involved, because that is a war, unlike a war with North Korea, that the whole world will engage in. Because you mentioned Syria, and your points are correct. It's Sunni versus Shia Islam. It's brother fighting brother, just as the Barashith Genesis account foretold. But, you know, the bottom line with this in Syria is it's a proxy war. It's a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and Iran. And on the side of Saudi Arabia is the United States and Europe. And on the side of Iran is China and Russia. And so in Syria, we have a proxy war that actually could sweep in the whole world. That's where the next world war is likely to come from, because of who's on whose side. This is the Shattering Myths. We're with Avi Lipkin, and you're encouraged to go check out Avi's site, VicMord.com, and review the books that Avi is offering. And we'll return with our last segment with Avi Lipkin after the break. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're here with Avi Lipkin, the author of a number of books on Israel and on Islam. You can reach him at VicMord.com. Avi, is there an actual country called Palestine, or is there a historic people known as Palestinians?
No people known as the Palestinians, but they do have four countries. They have Gaza, they have Jordan, they have what is known as Judea and Samaria, the West Bank, and they also have a pretty big enclave within Israel itself, the Arab Israeli villages, which call themselves Palestinians too. So there are actually four Palestines.
So this is a mythical name of a mythical people, but the mythical name of these mythical people are occupying four areas of the world. They are the majority of the population of Jordan. They're a significant percentage of the population of a number of surrounding countries, and they are, of course, the exclusive occupants of Gaza, and a significant presence in both Israel and in Judea and Samaria.
Yes, I call them the enigma. They exist in order to nullify and disqualify the Jewish people and the state of Israel.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, is that if you go back with one exception, and that would be in 135 CE after Rabbi Akiva promoted the false Messiah Bar Kokhba and tweaked the nose of the Romans to the point where they expelled hundreds of thousands of Jews, began the diaspora, and salted the land of Israel, and were so upset by the whole thing that the Yehudim would have the audacity to challenge Roman supremacy, that they renamed Judea, the province of Judea. Yehuda is what they called it at the time. They renamed it after a long extinct enemy of Israel, the Philistines.
Right.
And that's how the name came into to being. But that name, other than being used by scholars who love all things Latin, and because Rome is associated with Latin, and that's the scholarly language, there were some scholars that used it. But other than that, no one used it, because they knew that it was nothing but a myth perpetrated by the Romans to lash out against a nation that actually had the chutzpah to to go after them.
Very correct. And indeed, in my books, I explain that according to the Roman way of thinking, if every Roman nobleman had 23 slaves in Israel, in Yehuda, there were 23 free people for one slave. In other words, slavery was something frowned upon in the Jewish areas. And the Romans saw this as a threat to the Roman way of life, because outside of Israel, all the Roman areas had slaves. And
right.
slavery was condoned. And so this whole idea of Judaism, of freeing the slaves every 7 years and frowning on slavery, this is the Romans conceived this as a threat to the Roman Empire also.
Well, they certainly fixed that, because it was Yehudim who were enslaved to build the Colosseum. It was the spoils of the wealth extracted from the Second Temple that was used to fund the construction of the Colosseum. And so Romans enslaved more Jews than anyone other than perhaps the Babylonians and the Assyrians.
Yes, there was indeed a glut on the slave market in Rome after the destruction of Bar Kokhba and his forces.
Yes. Yeah, it is a great travesty as to what had happened. It's kind of interesting, too, if you study the book of Daniel, when he is predicting who is going to lead the forces of Hasatan in the last days. He actually says that it is the people who came to destroy Israel in the temple that will be the allies of Hasatan in the last days. And when you look at the place from which the Roman legions came to destroy the Rabbi Akiba and his false Messiah, you find that most of them emanate out of what the new country today that is called Macedonia. And it is also interesting that Daniel goes on to predict that the Torahless one will emerge from a small country, will unify with two other countries, and then will form a league of 10 countries. And Macedonia certainly looks like a place that we ought to keep our eye on as it relates to a leader that will be like Muhammad and seek to hunt Jews as prey. Avi, I want to thank you for being part of the program and for stimulating our thinking and discussion on all things Yisrael. There is nothing more important to Yahweh than his chosen people.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.